I don't know how we can carry on with this podcast.
I know.
No Crumbly.
Yep.
No Steve.
Yeah.
No fake Keith.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just the three of us carrying this thing. It's, you know, I mean, really. Yeah. There's somebody at the door.
I bring Sutek's gift of Karen.
Put me down. I was writing something. Look, you great big oaf. Oh, hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi there.
That's the weirdest thing you've ever seen.
For
giant dog dropping you off
mankind.
Like that.
Thank you, Sutek.
Thank you, Sutek.
Good boy.
Good evening and welcome to the Staggering Stories podcast number 449. I'm Karen.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jean.
And I, yes, I, at last and finally,
my huggy squeezy toy.
I've missed this so much.
Sounded like you were going to something from Pyramids of Mars.
I did.
Am the only servant of Zutek.
He needs no other.
Base yourself.
You grovelling insect.
Huggy squeezy toy.
Oh, God. And so, weird dogged deliveries aside, it's time for the news with El Presidente.
Woo! Doctor Who.
I am.
2024. Series coming to disc. Doctor Who may well end up being the last TV series still putting out DVDs and Blu-rays, as the world is slowly forcing everyone into subscribing to a multitude of different streaming channel services. It is therefore no surprise that the 2024 series, aka Season 1, aka Series 14, or Season 40, depending on who you ask, is getting just such a DVD and Blu-ray release. Unfortunately, there appears to be no sign of a 4K disc release, and it is currently unclear if these discs will only be available in the UK. With Disney streaming the series in the rest of the world, we may be the only country to get physical media. The 7 discs will contain the 8 episodes plus the preceding Christmas special, The Church on Ruby Road, and the Tales of the TARDIS version of The Pyramids of Mars. The full-length version of The Doctor Who Unleashed will make up the bulk of the extras, but also the 3 in-vision commentaries for The Church of Ruby Road, Boom, and Empire of Death. Various interviews, set tours and video diaries. Very little of it appears new to this set, but it does bring it all together. The set is due for release on the 12th of August for the somewhat rich price of £59.99 for the Blu-ray Steelbook, £49.99 for the regular Blu-ray set, and £39.99 for the DV version.
I prefer having the actual physical thing.
Yeah, me too.
Streaming's all very well and good, and I suppose you could record it, but I prefer having discs.
Yeah.
Oh, God, we're old-fashioned because we prefer having Blu-ray.
I have to say, as someone that has all of the discs that have ever come out, I can watch Unearthly Child whenever I like. Case closed.
Yeah, same here.
And the various Star Trek things that have disappeared.
Yeah, it is a shame that on the iPlayer you get 4K ultra definition with high dynamic range, which you don't get on discs. It's actually higher quality, apart from bitrate. But the actual size of the picture and the depth of the colours are better on the iPlayer than on a disc. But...
Speaking for the...
That is a matter of opinion.
Speaking for the optically challenged, I notice no difference.
Well, yeah.
The colour of red is slightly, modicumly more red than red.
Oh, is
red.
It? Yeah. But it's still red.
I know you like to keep the cutting edge of technology, but that doesn't mean a thing to me.
Well, is Mr. Perfection over there?
Yeah.
We've got a decent
He is wearing the bluest shirt I've ever seen in my life.
The bluest blue.
The bluest blue in all the land.
The thing is, isn't the BBC, when they put the
Spanish
universe fact. Up,
mm-hmm.
It isn't permanent. They've only said it's only for like 12 months and then it'll be reviewed. So Don't guarantee you're going to be able to access all the old stuff and
start
what
recording,
have you.
People. Start recording.
Yeah. Can you record anymore? I haven't got
I don't know.
In theory, my TV can record, but it's tied to that TV.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a PVR box, but I can't move it anywhere else.
I haven't got over our 10-year-old grandson telling me that vinyl's a silly way to listen to music.
I expect all it will do will increase the underground.
Yeah, it will be back like it used to be.
Yeah.
300 quid for one fuzzy episode.
Or where people have been able to get hold of copies and download and it's on the net and get shared that way.
For one fuzzy episode.
Neuromancer. Apple looking to make a TV series. William Ford Gibson's seminal 1984 cyberpunk novel Neuromancer is getting the TV pre-production treatment at Apple TV Plus. The famously hard-going book introduced the world to the word cyberspace and won all three big sci-fi book awards of the Nebula, the Hugo and the Philip K. Dick Memorial Award. Whether this series will get beyond production hell and which, if any, of the currently attached names make it through the process is something only time can tell us. Given Apple has already given us the likes of Foundation, For All Mankind, Silo and Severance, all great sci-fi series, there does appear a good chance they will not only make, but also create, a quality adaptation.
I know it's spelt differently, but please tell me Duran Duran are going to do the theme tune.
They're still alive, aren't they?
That one is for people of a certain age.
Yeah, that was a good 40 years ago, presumably at this
They're
point.
They're still alive!
And they were the first new romancers.
No, Spandau Ballet were.
Yeah, Spandau. Yeah, all right. Spandau
but Duran Duran were better. Duran. So much better.
At least in their 60s by now, I would have thought.
Do you know Nothing how old the Stones that? Are? Yeah. And the Who are? And they're going.
Anyway.
The Terminator.
Oh.
Netflix gets animated. Netflix have their own new sci-fi program coming, and this one is an anime Terminator series. This version of the Terminator universe sees a future soldier sent back to 1997 to protect a Japanese scientist who's building a rival to Skynet. The eight-part series stars Timothy Oliphant as the Terminator and Rosario Dawson as the rival AI, amongst many others. The series is set to drop on Judgment Day, the 29th of August.
Okay. I've never really been one for anime, but
There's been a couple of things that have caught my attention. Certainly the Animatrix.
The Animatrix, yeah. That was quite good.
Yeah.
And unusual for its time. There's been a few like that.
Yeah.
You see, there's so many different versions of the Terminator timeline now. You may as well just create it from scratch again.
It's splintered.
Have we had a Lego Terminator?
I'm not sure we have yet.
There's a gap to be plugged there.
I have to admit, anime, the style of anime suits Terminator.
That's what I was thinking. You can see it.
Yeah.
He's like Akira, that sort of look.
So I've seen an anime version, a modernised anime version of Metropolis.
Oh, really?
Okay. And it works because it's got that slight steampunky look, which does well, fits well with the anime style of, it's not cartooning, but cartooning.
Any addendums?
Well, I've got one too.
You've got Adam, should we have your addendum first?
This is from Big Finish.
Just a minute. Stop whining.
So Big Finish have a new event to go to in September, I believe. It is Paul McGann, India Fisher, to star in a special one-off live recording of an Eighth Doctor Adventure.
Oh, we've got to go to that.
Yeah.
When?
It doesn't clash. When's Hooverville?
Don't think it clashes with Hooverville.
End of August, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the last day of August.
It's called Doctor Who, the Stuff of Legend, and they've recorded it already, and it'll be released on the 14th September, simultaneously with the live-action version, or on-stage version, on the 14th September.
I've never heckled.
Yeah.
And you will not be heckling this time. You stay quiet while they record.
It's at Cardigan Hall, which is where they had the recent Big Finish Day in London. That's off Sloane Square.
Mm-hmm. We missed that.
Yeah.
That kind of crept up on us.
Yeah, it did.
Boo.
It wasn't in Derby either, unfortunately. But and this marks 25 years of Doctor Who at Big Finish.
Oh, I think I would like to go that.
Tickets go on sale.
Don't tell them.
This Friday, which should be actually before this podcast goes out. So it's probably sold out by the time this news goes out, I'm afraid. Price begin at £18. I don't know what that means, beginner. That implies it goes up a lot more than that.
Yeah. For 25
depends
quid.
Where you're sat.
For 25 quid, you can lick Paul McGann.
Yeah.
They've probably got admission only to watch, or there'll be one where you get the DVD.
Yeah,
you'll get
CD.
The CD.
Or the download.
Yeah.
So, yeah, India Fisher, Paul McGann, Alex McQueen as the Master, Nick Briggs as the Daleks.
Well, who else?
Are you going to hold the door open for her again?
Only if we're in the lavatory at the same time.
Okay.
Come on then, boy. What's your addendum?
My first addendum.
Oh, God.
Addendum the first.
He sat in the corner while we were sort of having our cup of coffee and waiting for Jean to arrive.
Right.
And every now and then I would hear giggling.
Okay.
And, yeah, I looked over and he wasn't touching himself, so I just assumed it was something for the podcast.
I love you.
I love you too. Carry on.
It's slightly outside our wheelhouse.
Right.
But there is going to be a new Sherlock Holmes series.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This one, as the film, is Young Sherlock.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be Guy Ritchie returning to the Sherlock IP. To
okay.
produce these TV series, this TV
right.
series.
There was talk of him doing a third
film. The third film has been in production hell for the last, what is it, 5-10 years?
I don't know, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's going to be young Sherlock?
Hang on, I've got it listed down here somewhere.
35-year-old Daniel Radcliffe.
No.
Bearded.
No.
Yeah.
Fiennes Tiffin.
What?
Never heard of him.
Ah.
Probably a child actor, so not
Child actor. He's still Sherlock is still living at home at the moment, and he's getting involved in a major murder mystery in Oxford. It also stars his parents, Natasha. I apologise, I'm going to mangle this. Natasha McElhone and right. Tiffin's real life uncle, Joseph Fiennes.
Oh, okay.
But quite interestingly, CBS, or almost exactly the same time, are producing a young Einstein.
Young Einstein?
Which is roughly the same idea.
Patent.
Yeah, the young Einstein one is based off a successful German show.
Oh, okay.
The young Einstein has been in production hell since the Earth That Was.
Right.
Since
okay.
before 2019.
What's your next addendum?
Addendum the second.
Mm.
Prodigy!
Okay, Star Trek Prodigy.
Star Trek Prodigy. As of this recording of this podcast, its second season has gone live on Netflix.
Oh, okay. Months after it appeared in France.
Months after it. Yeah, months after it popped up. I've watched the entirety of the first season on Netflix.
Right.
I've enjoyed it immensely.
Okay, even though it's got Janeway in it.
Even though it's got Janeway in it. Gosh. It had at least two wonderful flashback episodes. One was set on the holodeck with our hero attempting the Kobayashi Maru. So we had guest parts from Odo, Spock, and
Odo.
Yeah, Odo, Spock, and Lieutenant Uhura.
Have they recast or they take?
No, they had trolled the entire
right.
back catalogue and used dialogues that suited the scene that was
all
needed.
All three of those have gone now.
Yeah,
so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And also Crusher, who was obviously Beverly.
Okay.
Beverly Crusher, who was still there, who showed she could actually record linking dialogue or
yeah.
whatever. And there was another one where they discovered an old, broken, original Enterprise shuttle.
Okay,
and
yeah.
this society had modelled its life,
oh,
or modelled themselves on Kirk, Spock, McCoy. And it was a wonderful sort of deep-cut flashbacks.
Oh, wow, okay.
If you get the chance, I totally recommend it.
Okay.
And I'm looking forward to the season two, where not only do we have Janeway, but she's also joined by the Doctor, the Holo Doctor.
Okay.
And the cheese?
And possibly the cheese.
And that's the end of the
movie. And addendum
oh,
the third.
God.
This one has actually creeped up on me, rather surprisingly. There is a new Hellboy trailer.
Really?
Yes.
Well, for a film or what?
For a film. Hellboy has once again been rebooted. And we have a new trailer up and about, Hellboy, the Crooked Man.
Who's playing Hellboy?
I do know that, if you'll bear with me. Hang on.
Not David Harbour.
David Harbour, no.
Ron Perlman.
No, unfortunately, it is not David Harbour or Ron Perlman, because although the Harbour film was, quite frankly, terrible, I thought he was quite good in it.
Yeah.
But Ron Perlman, is he alive?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still with
really
Ron Perlman is the quintessential. That's the word, yeah. Quintessential Hellboy. Thank you. Casey, I've got your name there.
Casey Jones.
Jack Casey. is playing Hellboy.
Okay, not a name I recognise.
And it is set in 1950.
Ooh.
I've seen the trailer. It is quite low budget, but it's still, from what I've seen from the trailer, it looks good and it still works.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Hollywood has had this thing recently, particularly since the pandemic, of throwing too much money at films.
Oh, yeah. Besides Hellboy himself, which obviously they need to make him up and everything, so that's costing a bit of money.
Job every day.
But besides Hellboy himself, it looks like they have gone back to basics.
Come back to the comics.
Which is often what is called for.
Yeah, that was my last addendum.
You sure? I'm not going to announce the end of the news
I'm not going to suddenly jump in again. You can announce the end of the news.
I'm trusting you here.
I wouldn't if I was you.
And that's the end of the news.
Woo!
We have, of course, been watching Doctor Who.
Doctor Who?
So let's pause for music.
Ooh.
Have we been watching?
Empire of Death.
The most Doctor Who title ever.
It really was. Yeah. That's what we said at the time, wasn't it?
Yep.
So she shoots his last one?
Last one this season. Yes, he's awesome. Back next season.
Awesome cliffhanger.
Definitely.
Yep.
It's a small segue. I have been enjoying the multiple memes that have been popping up.
Yeah, me too.
My favourite one is the one I nicked for my... thing, which is
let's start with that conversation, shall we? Let's think of all the times the TARDIS was destroyed while still having Sutek on it.
I mean, universe was reset by the Pandorica, it should have been thrown off at that point.
My favourite one is the scene from the end of Day of the Doctor,
with about 12
police boxes and morning suit. How are you,
Well, there was Frontios, where the TARDIS was destroyed.
Yeah.
So was Sutek just sitting there, twiddling his thumbs, waiting? Or just holding on to a specific bit.
Sutek. He found himself his own Zero cabinet.
Sutek being painted pink.
Pink during the Happiness Patrol.
So he did put one up from Amy's Choice, where the TARDIS is by the cold star, and he got Sutek freezing.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, that was in a dream. It didn't really happen. It's a nice idea.
Borrowing the Doctor's scarf.
Well, the other one I like is Captain Jack holding on, and Sutek like, get off! Get off!
But then he's meant to be some sort of godlike being, so, you know, what the heck. This had so many little plot holes, but God, it was glorious.
Shush.
I absolutely adored this episode and the one previously, and I don't care about the plot holes. I watched it, I loved it from beginning to end. The only thing that peed me off was Ruby's mum.
Yeah.
That was the biggest
pop-out.
You're building it up to being something big. And I know Rusty likes his, but it turns out something normal was the most dangerous thing of all. But that was bollocks.
Yeah.
And so was her naming Ruby by randomly pointing at a road sign.
No one
was there to see.
Apparently the whole thing of her being a normal person. Yes, everyone who went, this is like Rey out of Star Wars. That's because it's like Rey out of Star Wars. It's a deliberate thing.
Well,
but...
except Rey didn't stay a nobody in Star Wars.
But... And it has been pointed out, Mummy might not be no one. Who's Daddy?
William Benjamin Garnett.
Yeah.
There's a lot of...
He's a 15-year-old kid.
I got to agree, it didn't land for me. I didn't buy it. It didn't land for me, and it still doesn't really land for me. The only thing I can work around it is the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Right.
I'm uncertain about that.
Yeah, the more you examine something, the more you change it. And the fact that they were examining, looking, scrutinising has given it importance. The importance that the situation had was the one that we put on it.
Yeah, that's certainly what he was going for.
Yeah.
What the Doctor was saying.
Yeah.
We give things importance.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, but it still doesn't explain why it snowed.
Oh, yeah.
Was a song in her heart which scared gods.
Yeah.
Why time changed. She didn't point in the original timeline.
Yeah.
I mean, part of me likes the fact that that Ruby is just a normal person. Because that kind of brings the show back to the fact that assistants aren't always
something special.
Bad wolves, observers of the
most they are possible girls.
Yeah, that they are just us, the observer. They're a normal person. They're the link between us and the Doctor, which has sometimes got kind of a bit of lost in translation over the years. So I quite like that. I think a lot of the reason people felt disappointed was because it wasn't so much the show promised so much. It's more we thought the show promised so much. We thought that this was going to be so. All the markers were there, and that's what he was leading you to and this temptation to and all the rest of it. But there was nowhere in there that said, this is going to be Susan, and this Mel is going to die, and she is going to turn out to be the princess of the universe.
But it did put a load of elements in there which never got explained.
Yeah, it put emphasis on that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the disappointment is the fans, myself included, came up with these wonderful theories that would have been amazing if they played out.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's half the problem. When you invite speculation like that, people do come up with their own ideas and they prefer their own ideas to what comes out on TV, generally. And I've had that before.
Yeah.
And definitely here, I mean, what you were saying about Mrs. Flood being the opposite, the god of life.
Yeah.
That would have been a great explanation.
We don't know what she is yet.
We don't.
If it's not Romana, it's got to be Susie, it's got to be blah, blah, blah. Just because she happened to wear a white outfit on the roof.
Just as something I'd like to throw out there is we have been told that a life form with two hearts is a very rare thing. Wait until I've told the boss.
We still don't know who that is.
We still don't know who the boss is.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
From the Star Beast.
I think the disappointment, I loved both the two final episodes. I would happily watch them over and over and over again. I thought they were excellent. But if you have to pick something that I feel let it down, I'm reminded of Bart Simpson during the reading of The Raven. When it goes, darkness there and nothing more. And he says, do you know what would have been better than darkness? Anything.
Yeah.
And that's the feeling I got with Ruby's mum.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, do you know what would have been better than she's just a normal woman? Anything. Because it really left you thinking, okay. Yeah.
But of course, her story isn't done yet. We're told that she's coming back next season. So perhaps these are elements that have been left over deliberately?
Maybe.
The problem is he's filmed it, it's in the can. Yeah. So any reaction he might have had to our disappointment can't now happen.
Yeah. I mean, so we've still got the mystery of Mrs. Flood hanging out there.
Yeah,
so,
yeah but it so makes we've got... it rather hard to care to speculate at this point.
Oh, yeah, I'm not denying that. I'm not denying that.
You just set yourself up for a fool, aren't
you? I'm just saying it's the obvious that the story isn't finished yet.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't buy into that, Adam, that you it puts you off wanting to speculate. That's the whole point of being a fan. For 60 years now, all of us, in one way, shape or form, have been speculating about what's going to happen next. And 9 times out of 10, we're wrong.
Yeah.
But we
yeah.
still speculate. Yeah. It's and part it's, of the fun.
And occasionally, when you get it right, it is glorious.
You're thinking of the Impossible Girl, aren't you?
Impossible Girl and...
You guessed Clara straight off.
Impossible Girl and Keeper of Traken.
Oh, yeah, you told me about a Keeper of Traken.
yeah. My highest point and my lowest point.
The other thing you've also got is... it's very difficult. You've got a two-parter, which is the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to build up the first part.
Which they did.
You then have to build down the second part. You can't build the second part up because there's nowhere to go.
But the second part after the build-up is meant to be the bam.
Yeah,
the like resolution. Parting of the ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be the woohoo back down the other side.
It's kind of woohoo.
Yeah, a mystery is meant to be a complex mechanism where you get clues, you get misdirection, but when you get the resolution, you can look back and think, oh, I should have figured that out, or it makes sense.
You can follow
now.
The path.
Yeah.
But this was not that.
No.
Which is a shame, but okay, it's one element of the story, it's not the entire story. No.
I did think we were going to lose Mel.
Well, technically we did.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah. I thought we were going to lose her for good.
Well you did. I have to say, dear listeners, that I was sitting next to my beloved in the cinema watching it, and I did hear a very silent, oh no.
I was really worried about her.
Yeah.
But I did love her. First thing she spots is the Sixth Doctor's jacket, coat and yeah. necktie.
Yeah.
And then she curled up and went to sleep on Sylvester's jumper.
Yeah.
Can somebody explain to me the memory TARDIS? Now, I know it's from the
it's what
the
everyone remembers of the TARDIS. So that it's got like, you know, when you try to remember.
I know what it is.
Yeah.
But how did it end up being there is more like what I'm saying. Yeah.
Well, yes, it was based on the videotape and the time window. What is the memory of a time machine, he says in the first episode?
Yeah.
It turns out the memory of a time machine is a time machine.
Yeah.
At least so a cut-down version.
It kind of, like, created itself.
Yeah.
So it's not a TARDIS as in our TARDIS that's got a soul and all the rest of it. It's just a TARDIS.
No, I think...
It's an echo of the TARDIS.
I think it was an offshoot of our TARDIS.
Yeah.
As in the fact that she knew... although she had been seduced and sung to, she couldn't abandon him, so left a part or something of herself so he could keep travelling.
Right. Mm.
That's what it is in my mind.
Yeah. We don't quite know what happened to it either.
No.
It's got left behind because they were teleported over time from 2046 back to 2024.
When the time resets, I suspect she gets absorbed back into... Yeah.
It's also very unclear how they got teleported in time. I've never seen that before, but...
We've spoken about what we think Rusty did wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
There was so much about that episode that was right.
The Kate send-off was great.
The scene with the woman in the tent.
Oh, yeah.
And the baby in the cradle.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that... Oh, Jesus, nearly set me off, because that was just wonderfully acted by both of them.
Yeah.
And then Kate's final lines and...
And I believed it at the time.
Yeah. So did I!
Yeah! Yeah.
Oh.
It, within about 2 minutes, it's obvious, oh no, this is too much, it's
all
getting
reset. I'm not quite sure she was obsessed with birds singing, but...
Yeah,
but I did like when they're firing, just... Once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bullets dissolving, Mom! Just once.
The Brigadier. Just once I'd like to meet something that's not impervious
to bullets. And the whole moped or scooter ride through London as everything dissolves. That was so
and
cool.
It impressed me, and I'm thankful for the first time I have seen a mummy dust cloud actually do something.
Yeah.
We've had it in The Mummy, the film The Mummy.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
We had it in the film The Mummy where it took out a plane, I think, but didn't actually do a lot.
Yeah.
We had it in the Tom Cruise Mummy remake where it did absolutely nothing except for it was a dust cloud.
Yeah.
But this one, there was a purpose behind
it. Destroyed everyone.
It destroyed everything.
Killed all life, apparently. Yeah.
I love Lenny Rush shared something on Instagram about when Sutek arrives at units and they'd all been shown where their eye line was and that. And he didn't know that they'd actually have the voice booming out.
Oh,
so when you see Morris jump and look scared, that was real.
That's genuine.
Because he's only 14, bless him. And,
yeah.
And I have to say, I love Gabriel Wolf's voice. And it's still there.
It's
like Tom Baker. Baker's voice, it's going to be the last thing to go.
I'd like to nip back a bit to Bonnie Langford, the reaction to the coats and the jumper.
Yeah.
Mm. Watching the behind the scenes, I'm wondering if that was an ad lib. I'm wondering her reaction. They've put Sylvester's jumper somewhere in there, and she's gone, grabbed it, and settled it. You know,
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Yeah, it's an extension of her character.
Yeah.
But she knows the character so well.
And how well this character matured compared to where she began.
Oh God!
No screaming in this one at all.
Yeah, no, she got really pissed off.
The doctor might be swearing and hitting doors, but she's not having any of it.
She basically told him put his big boy trousers on and get on with it and stop sulking.
Yeah,
she's used to the malaise the Sixth Doctor would occasionally fall into. So she's used to that.
But it seems to be the way with all the old companions, when he meets them again or she meets them again, they've got no time for their crap.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Good to see you. We've got this.
It's the ex-boyfriend. You don't need to impress anymore.
Yeah.
There was one bit that annoyed me ever so slightly because it was totally and utterly unnecessary. And I'm afraid it did smack as virtual signalling. In the TARDIS, when Ruby says, why all that Egyptian stuff? And he said the whole thing about
cultural appropriation. But the thing is, excuse me, it isn't because the Egyptians culturally reappropriated it
from the asylums.
That's what I mean. It's a cultural appropriation, yes.
By the Egyptians.
But who? Who's doing it? I love that bit.
I love that. I thought it was wonderful.
It just made me... It just... Ooh, if it is the Egyptians... nicking the sirens, that's fine. But if it's the other way round, which is how I kind of like read it for a moment, I'm like, we don't need that.
I didn't read it that way. The Egyptians have nicked it from the sirens.
Well, yeah, they appear to them as gods. Yeah, literally.
Oh, dear.
We're going to come back to it, but there's a little bit of that in
Pyramids
of Mars retelling, which, again, perfectly correct.
I thoroughly enjoyed this one. It's a great...
Besides the final.
You have to suspend your disbelief. Oh, yeah, that's the whole point of Doctor Who. In this one, you really did, with Doggy on the rope going through the universe.
It's no different than pulling the Earth
back to its spots. I did think that Ruby was going to be the one who cut the rope. I thought that she would realise he was so reluctant to do it that she did it for him.
I don't think the Doctor ever would let his assistant become a killer.
But I think she would do it when he was I don't think she should have given him the choice.
Yeah, this Doctor is quite concerned about taking life.
When
the Doctor at other times has not been.
So it's
definitely a different take, this Doctor. I suppose he's the healed Doctor, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's getting away from that sort of thing. But yeah, other Doctors would just not think twice about killing.
I mean, one of the things that's come up a few times has been that how much he cries in this series.
And he does again in this episode. Yeah.
I think a bit of it is the Vincent van Gogh. Why are you crying?
Yeah.
Because she's lost Ruby, but she doesn't know she's lost Ruby. I think part of it is something for where the bi-regeneration has happened. There's a little bit of him that's still missing. And there's something that I don't think it's entirely that we have an emotional Doctor. I think there's something behind those emotions that's going to come out in the story at some point as well.
I disagree. I think he's just free with his emotions.
Yeah, that's
quite frankly, half the stuff they went through, I'd have been crying the whole time.
And the things that are brought back, the whole flux appears to have been undone now.
Yay!
Quite possibly, yeah. If he's bringing death to death.
Does that mean, though, that entropy was undone as well? Is Traken out there somewhere?
Is Gallifrey back?
Yeah.
Given how many times the universe has been set, reset...
there's eight Trakens all in a row.
The fact that everyone lost their memory except for River Song, who hadn't been born because her parents weren't even married at that point.
It's timey-wimey. Just don't even try and think about it. Wibbly wobbly. Someone out there, please come up with a flow chart.
Oh, no!
Because your brain will hurt just trying to work it out. Now, Mrs. Flood.
Yes.
I thought she was going to hurt Nana. Yeah. At first I thought she was going to hurt Nana, and that worried me because I like Nana. The woman only wants a cup of tea.
And that thing where, do you believe in God, tell him I'm going to come to the gates and what have you.
She had such plans.
Now, obviously, she still has those
plans.
Are
still
from her Mary Poppins episode on the roof.
There's loads of people, because of the clever boy bit that she... I don't think it's Clara.
No.
Clara is dead.
Well, there's been all these memes about she's wearing the same clothes as companions. Yeah. She's wearing Rory's wind cheater, Romana's thingy. Bollocks to that. That's just someone dicking around.
I don't think it's Romana. I just like the whole thing about the white Mary Poppins Romana thing. A lot of people have implied, oh, well, maybe it's Missy because of the whole...
Umbrella thing. I personally think it's Servalan. Servalan wore that coat.
There was always meant to be a crossover.
Yeah. I think that's what it's going to be.
I don't know if she's a Time Lord.
I still think you were right about her being an agent of maybe not Horus or whatever, but something like that, something almost equal to... Yeah.
There is obviously a lot more to see there. I really hope she isn't an incarnation of Missy the Master. Because
I can't see how it can be.
It's not necessary. Not because I don't... Yeah, I like Missy. I just don't say Missy the Master, but...
the Doctor saw her and he would have recognised her.
He would have recognised her. So I don't think it's Missy Master.
I think she's someone new.
Yeah, and it's nice to have old villains in, but you also want new ones every now and then.
I did like when Rose and Ruby were back at the flat and Mrs. Flood had been brought over to sit with Nana. And she said to Rose, oh, you're lovely, darling. Yeah, yeah. And then to Ruby, oh, still waiting for that growth spurt.
What also, the small fact of what I loved about that is when she first walked into the flat, she's Mockney, you know, chirpy little Cockney. Yeah. And then when she's alone with Nana, it's pronounced English.
Yes. I suppose, yeah.
The accent changed. It was very, very pronounced English.
Yeah. Yes, I like to get out. I've been able to keep myself for myself.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, keep myself hidden away.
Yeah.
Mm. Is there something to do with like one of those watches again? Whatever those things were called.
Memory watches type.
But then the Doctor didn't know who he was when he was in the memory watch. Yeah.
But she didn't step outside her perceived pattern until she saw the TARDIS first time in Ruby Road.
Yeah.
And the Church of Ruby Road in the first Christmas episode.
Was she playing the part at that point, or was she changed during the episode? I don't know.
Did seeing the TARDIS unlock something?
Like Yana, seeing the police box unlocked something.
Yeah.
Didn't unlock the Master, but it unlocked something.
And I think the fact that she broke the fourth wall at the very end, and there's still a lot to be known, we still, I think, are in the realm of the giggle.
Yeah.
I think we're still in Mavity world rather than Gravity world.
Yeah.
Slightly twisted sense of reality.
So is she in the Christmas special?
Mrs. Flood, we don't know.
Don't know at the moment.
Gosh, it's interesting. So despite us bitching and moaning about the plot holes...
I've got one other thing.
What?
Harry Sullivan's great-great-granddaughter. Maybe he is.
Sullivan's daughter?
Great-great, I mean.
Great-granddaughter.
Maybe a time machine involved.
He started young. Really?
Really young.
Anyway, she probably isn't, but Lieutenant Sullivan.
Yeah.
But it comes down to the time room with them.
Yeah.
The rest of the planet is being turned into dust.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Doctor take her into relative safety of the TARDIS with them, or does he go and lock her in a cupboard somewhere? What was it? Go to room 17.
Bunker 17.
I like to think she's Harry Sullivan's daughter.
I like to think she's Harry Sullivan's daughter. Yeah. But why did he send her out to be turned to dust?
Well, into the bunker.
Safe in the bunker.
Yeah. Yeah. That could either just be a throwaway little nod for the fans.
I think it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't the name. It's the fact that he just sent someone off to be in the bunker.
Well, we had a Sullivan in Knock Knock, didn't we?
Mm, we
that
did.
Was meant to be, was it his son or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense that, you know, his kids go to UNIT and that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, though, having watched it at cinema, the mood at the end of the episode was very different to Day of the Doctor. Everybody filed out quite quietly.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they did the first episode, well, the penultimate episode first, and then you get that break.
There was quite a lot of speculation and stuff going on.
And there was lots of buzz and that. And there was buzz all the way through until the end. And then it was like, oh.
Yeah, is that it?
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'm going home to bed now.
I did enjoy it. I don't know. I mean, yes, there's a lot of fan ideas and all the rest of it, and some of them really nice ideas, some of them really naff and all the rest of it. But it wasn't a damp squid up at the end. But it, as you say, it didn't have that boom at the end. It didn't have that...
A balloon going...
Yeah, it deflated.
...around the room rather than...
Or deflated. Going around the time vortex.
Yeah.
All that.
Which he'd already survived once. So how is going to die again in the time vortex?
He was outside the protection of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
He was holding on to the TARDIS before.
Anywhere near the TARDIS last time he was sent into the time vortex.
Oh, that was just he had his special suit on.
Didn't hit the walls.
Yeah. And break things open. Oh, dear.
Oh, one of the other things that a lot of people complained about, so it was the fact that his little Sutek, originally in Mars, how comes he big doggy? I liked the fact that he was big, big, powerful Sutek. Yeah, he is a god. He took various forms. The last time we saw him, he had been captured.
Yeah, as we mentioned last time, he was contained. He was in a force field.
This time he's been absorbing the time vortex everything as he goes.
Yeah, I thought it was big doggy.
I thought it was excellent. Yeah, and I like the green frame they made so everyone had an eye line to look at. Okay, so as I said, as much as we've bitched about the plot holes, we still thoroughly enjoyed this.
On the whole,
so
it's okay.
Tell us what you thought. Write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo!
Meanwhile, while that was all going on, we had a little vignette, I suppose you could have called it.
Homework
vignette that could have inserted in the middle of the episode quite easily.
It did, kind of.
Technically it did, because it was Doctor Who, Pyramids of Mars, Tales of the TARDIS.
Mm. Dun, dun, dun.
I haven't seen the Tales of the TARDIS version.
Oh, I did. I watched it today.
I haven't watched that one. I have watched the original one. I haven't watched the Tales of the TARDIS version, so I will have to do so to see the difference in the special effects. I am told there is one special effect from the original that is still retained. The hand effect.
No.
Is it gone?
No, it's gone. They've edited it out. She has been eviscerated.
No!
She has,
yeah.
Yep, the hand has gone.
The hand of Sutex cushion has gone. Anyway, yes.
So yeah. I was waiting for that specifically.
Yeah, poor Clara's been edited out of this Tales of the TARDIS version.
She's been brushed out.
Airbrushed.
I love Pyramids of Mars. Yeah. I love Pyramids. It's on there in my top sort of like 20 go-to episodes.
Yeah. Fourth Doctor, Tom Baker, Sarah Jane Smith.
It has, like the rest of the Tales of the TARDIS, it has a beginning and an ending, a framing device. It's the Doctor showing Ruby the images on the monitor thing from the TARDIS. So basically, it could slot right in to Empire of Death, with Ruby, the Doctor, and Mel expiring in the corner.
Yeah, you don't actually see her.
We don't see Mel in the little Tales of the TARDIS thing.
But we know she's there.
But that's where it fits.
She's having a kip because she's knackered because she's fighting off Sutek.
Yeah.
And you do, in the episode Empire of Death, you do get a couple of shots
that's
on the TV.
Yeah.
So here they sit down and watch the entire episode.
They've expanded. Well, the 70-minute story.
It is a cut down.
It's edited down to about 70 minutes rather than
cut out all the cliffhangers that you put together.
The cliffhangers, the recaps, and a few other bits and pieces I noticed.
Taken out, a bit of running around.
Mostly on episode 4, that you lose the puzzle bit with the stitching and the patterns on the wall. You lose that one, and you lose the two bell jars where you have to choose which mummy will tell the truth, which mummy will lie.
That's not things they cut. The things I would never cut out of the stories.
Well, they're not particularly essential to the plot.
You get the idea that there's a set of traps in there that they have to get through, because you get the button at the front, and I think there's something else. But they've cut down the traps.
Did they leave the walk in? Ten o'clock walk out. Yeah.
That's still in there.
The ad lib.
Essentially, we have the first attempt at Sutek to break free. To break free his imprisonment of Horus in Egypt. And the Eye of Horus, which is situated in a pyramid on Mars, hence the name.
Yeah, Pyramids of Mars. He's in a pyramid.
Yeah, there's only one. You know. Don't get technical.
Minor technicality, yeah. So, we have a few scatterings of new special effects in there, which I know you hate.
They're fairly subtle. Mind you, the originals weren't that bad.
They get rid of the disco ball effect as Sutek was being sucked down into the vortex?
Not when he's being sucked off.
That is actually changed.
Yeah.
You don't have the disco ball effect. It is now the opening title, modern opening titles, vortex effect.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which fits nicely in with the Empire of Death, because he's actually been ejected down into the vortex. Mm. But with my mind, originally it was a time tunnel. It wasn't actually the vortex. It was a time tunnel connecting the two because he was sent through the time tunnel to Mars. It works for the Tales of the TARDIS, but doesn't actually work for the original Pyramids of Mars, to my mind. But anyway.
Retcons.
It works for the retcon. Yeah. What other changes to the special effects?
The Force Wall.
Oh, yeah, that you never see. You just hear a boing.
I like that version.
No, I like the boing. Originally, you never saw the force wall. No. You just saw the reaction of people running into it.
And the boing
sound.
This time, there is a small wibble effect.
A wibble effect
on screen as it ripples.
Almost like you've touched water.
Yeah, okay. that's essentially everything else is exactly the same.
It still go boing.
It still goes boing. It's still the same effect.
Can I ask, when the TARDIS leaves, did they put the flames back in that the Doctor was trying to kick out? That they forgot to put in the first time?
He still kicks at absolutely nothing to put the flame out.
Because it was supposed to be, they were going to put some flames in afterwards, and that's what he was going to be kicking at.
Does Sarah Jane still get to use a gun?
Sarah still gets to use a gun. Yep. The overall thing about this that strikes me watching the condensed version is certainly it's Tom Baker at his most alien.
Oh, yeah.
He's most detached.
It starts off, the episode, he's really quite sullen.
Yeah, because he's still miffed having to go back to Loch Ness and chase after the Brigadier from Terror of the Zygons.
But it's his absolute uncaredness to Scarman Lawrence. Over the death of his brother.
Yeah, and also the death of Lawrence. Lawrence himself.
I warned you, I told him out of the way. Yeah,
yeah, it's a case of, I think originally we had this reaction because the potential of what Sutek could be. He had to push that to one side and just concentrate on stopping him.
Yeah.
And let him mourn and worry about everything after it's over.
Yeah.
On the original, there was a wonderful scene, bit of acting by Bernard Archer, Marcus Sharman, where he was shot through the glass.
Yeah.
And it's actually
reverse, shot in reverse.
It's played in reverse. He actually walked backwards. He did the scene backwards, and they've played it
forwards.
Yeah, that's still there.
They've still got that effect on it, unchanged.
That effect is still in there.
It's basically a repeat of the autumn effect, isn't it?
Yeah. I still love. There are wonderful bits of dialogue on this, which I love. Unlocking, a trinomic lock without the right thermal key is like trying to fix a pocket watch with a hammer and chisel.
Oh, yeah.
One force move and you never know the time again.
Yes.
And also the entire gel ignite sequence is still in there.
Yeah. And when she chucks the box to it.
Yeah.
Can you see detonators up there? No, perhaps he sneezed. And the look he gave Sarah.
I always thought that was an ad lib.
Yeah, but even, they haven't altered or changed that. That's still in there as well.
Is the crushing of the poacher.
Yeah, oh, it's still there.
Yeah, good. The poacher hugging is still in there.
That was the biggest hug ever.
Crush between boobies.
Because that's it. I mean, I love the Hinchcliffe era. It's dark and moody and ever so slightly violent. And some of the violence is more than you see now. It's more direct. Violence doesn't tend to be directly being crushed to death by mummies. It's indirect violence.
These days, it's more implied violence than being.
And I wasn't sure if they were going to. It's going to make it sound like I'm accusing people of snowflakes, but this is probably editors more than anything else. I wasn't sure if they were going to take out some of what could be seen as the more triggering scenes.
Well, that's why I wondered if they were going to let Sarah fire a gun.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I mean, I know she had to.
It's sort of crack shot.
Yeah, it's an integral part of the plot, and I couldn't see how they could
do it otherwise. I still don't understand what in her background made her such a good shot with a shotgun.
Aunt Lavinia.
Yeah.
Maybe it's part of normal journalist training. Mine
was the AK-47. Okay. I mean, nobody trains with shotguns.
I suspect some of it is that the Brigadier and Benton and Yates said, if you're going to hang around with him, we're going to teach you how to fire a gun.
To look after herself.
But yeah, I mean, Aunt Lavinia, I suspect, is someone that went out pheasant shooting would have probably taken. But then I'm a pretty good shot. I was asked to join the South East London Rifle Group, but I don't live in the countryside. I just happen to be a very good shot.
I'm going to give my bragging rights here and point out how good I am with a bow and arrow.
Precisely.
As Jim found out.
Which means you could have then taken it out with a bow and arrow.
I could have done.
Overall.
Gene nearly killed a man with a dog walking
straight
over
the hedge.
It went straight over the hedge. There he is, walking his peak and knees behind the field, and an arrow comes flying past.
I've nearly got the poacher.
Overall, personally, I think this still stands up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the original had room to breathe, had more room to breathe. But even though they've cut and spliced, and it still holds together, it still runs.
Yeah, it's not like the Daleks, where
they haven't really butchered it.
Yeah,
you're losing maybe a quarter of an hour of that. Most of that's recap.
The Daleks, to a certain extent, was slightly confusing with the cuts and the voiceovers. And
I've just
seen that less than 5 minutes ago. Yeah. Why am I watching it again now?
And the fact that you did actually lose whole contexts of parts. Of the plot on that one.
But the original episodes, I think, are very watchable and still hold up now. They just have more room to breathe.
I am actually quite surprised about them taking away the
puzzles.
The two robots.
Yeah.
Well,
purely because that is then referenced again. I cannot remember the episode, but there is an episode that's referenced again.
Are you my mummy? No.
The whole thing about if I ask, blah, blah, blah.
Originally, Sarah references death to the Daleks on the original show.
Right.
Because didn't you run into something like this on the Exelon City?
It is basically a retread of that.
Yeah, but that's cut out. I can understand why. Because you already know they're facing a set of traps to make progress through the pyramid. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to show any more. You know they're there.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, because things are much more tightly edited now.
Yeah,
yeah.
You wouldn't show Pyramids of Mars in all its glory as it was now.
Yeah, it's just reiterating old ground. It's unfortunate they've missed them, but it doesn't disturb the storyline.
Yeah. No, I don't either.
That's it. I think there's a balance to be found sometimes with stuff in that, yes, it doesn't necessarily disturb the story, but they're the niceties that make a story a little bit more. Yeah, it's a bit like not having sprinkles on an ice cream doesn't mean it's not a nice ice cream, but having sprinkles on the ice cream makes it a nicer ice cream. They're not necessary.
Pluse it.
This is what I mean by the original run had room to breathe.
Yeah.
That's a breathing section. It reiterates what we already know.
Yeah.
It's a nice little piece, but it's not necessary for the flow of the story.
That's the thing. Pyramid of Mars is one of those four-parters that is quite full. There isn't much on the recap point. To be honest, you could actually just take out the intervening credits and the recaps, and you would still have a very well-paced story that I think would be watched now, but it won't come in at the required time. And it's not so much the pacing, I think, on some of them, it's definitely the pacing. But on some of them, like these ones, I don't think it's so much the pacing. It's the time requirement that it's now dictated that this is how long you've got, not that length of time.
As we know, it's a major event. If they get a couple of extra minutes more or a half an hour more on the current running show.
Empire of Death was it 50, 55 minutes? Yeah. It was longer.
Yeah.
And that felt quite rushed.
Yeah.
It didn't have much time to breathe.
Why can't there be 60 minutes?
Time is money.
Having waffled on a lot, should we see what Crumbly thought of everything?
Yes. Why not?
You mean it's
Crumbly's Corner!
Crumbly's Corner!
Yes, we know you're there. We'll say hello to you later. We have to say hello to him now.
Getting upset because we mentioned two other doctors and not mention him?
Exactly. 1, 2, 3.
Hello,
Handles. Inky McSquirtle.
Nebulos.
Terence.
Terence Graham.
Dave Zilla the Mighty.
Dangerous Churchill. Nazi Spock. Assorted nebulas.
Folded up and tucked against the radiator, Clara.
And numerous other things that should never be seen in public.
And aren't.
People, you really don't know what we have to spend our time in here with.
Hello, Crumbly here.
Hello.
Sorry I'm late to my podcast, but I'm currently in sunny Hampshire at the moment. However, I would like to give my penny's worth on what has been discussed here tonight.
Yes.
Now, the Pyramids of Mars, a Peter Hinchcliffe production, I do believe, with the Doctor and Sarah Jane, who land in rural England, prompted by a number of things, including the fact that Sarah Jane caught a glimpse of a terrifying visage in the TARDIS control room.
Tom
this
Baker.
Is our first introduction to the Osirian Sutekh, who harbours the immodest intention of destroying all life on Earth. I was mildly disappointed that Sarah Jane was wearing a dress of Victoria's and not one of her fashion disasters. That would have been more than enough to have frightened off any errant Egyptian gods, methinks. The setting and time was appropriate as well, as it was turn-of-the-century England. There was a general fascination with Egyptology around that time, even though it would be another 11 years until Howard Carter discovered Tutankhamun's tomb.
You must be visionary.
We can all recall the ad-libbed scene where Sarah Jane wraps a shawl around her head in mockery of the Doctor.
Yep.
We also have the scene where the poacher is channeling his inner Marcel Marceau and the less said about the studio assistant's hand grabbing the cushion, the better. Keith,
Clara.
I'm not going to forgive you for reminding me of that scene. There's also some excellent scenery chewing in the form of the Egyptian who is looking after the house until Professor Scarman's return. The way he was hammering away at the on the keys of the organ would have had Rick Wakeman shaking his head in disbelief. The nice relief of this episode was in the form of the lumbering form of the servitors. As the Poacher found out, they can put on a surprisingly sort of swift turn of speed when the situation demands. Pyramids of Mars is a standout episode of Tom Baker's era, and Sutek, with all his understated malice, serves to make this a very notable episode indeed. Anyway, as the saying goes, you can't keep a good villain down, and in Empire of Death marks a welcome return for, well, everyone's favourite Osirian. I must confess I had a major nerdgasm when Sutek, this time around in all of his jackal-headed glory, was revealed as the main antagonist. In this two-parter, Shuti Getva is not afraid to, well, show self-doubt and fear as he realises what a formidable foe he is up against. Sutek is a noteworthy opponent for the Doctor, but he does spend quite a bit of time clinging bat or leech-like to the TARDIS, only making occasional forays away from it. It also provides a rare glimpse into seeing what happens when the Doctor is utterly vanquished and Sutek's reign spreads over the universe. Those who do survive feel their memories slipping away from them, and they're powerless to stop it. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be pointing at various artifacts and such in the re-remembered TARDIS that the gang managed to pilot. The climax of the show sees Sutek meeting his demise in the Time Vortex. This scene is a vindication of why the Doctor exists and his raison d'etre. Where Sutek brings only death and negation to the universe, the Doctor, loudly and proudly, shouts that he brings life and reason and purpose to the universe. That, and death plus death, brings life, means that creation is restored once again to the universe. Blimey, these two episodes have left me, well, an exhausted but satisfied heap, and it's well worth it. The culmination of this two-parter is, spoiler music, sha-la-la-la-la, Ruby finding her birth parents. It's all a bit Disney-fied and happy ending, but, in a twist to the tale, we are still wondering who the mysterious Angie Watts, I mean Mrs. Flood, is. I can only wait to see what happens next. Anyway, I've used up enough bandwidth for now, so I'll be in the studio for the next podcast. Yes. So until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Thank you, Crumbly.
Thank you, Crumbles.
He does know this is your living room and not an actual studio. have you been doing it? Look into my eyes. Look into you're in the studio.
Right, so as always, we want to know what you thought of Pyramids of Mars and whether Empire of Death was a suitable successor.
Indeed.
Write to us via show.
At.
Staggering.
Stories.
Dot.
Net.
Woohoo!
Now, some of you have already been writing to us.
Indeed, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we've heard from Jay.
Hello, Jay!
Jay says, hello all. First of all, happy 17th anniversary.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yes.
There. Now you have proof that some people do actually listen past the end of the credits. So we've come to the end of another season of Doctor Who, and it felt like we'd only started to get to know it.
Yeah.
Here we go then. Thoughts on the finale, Empire of Death.
Right.
Back in my feedback for last time, I had expressed concern over Mel's expression in that she looked like she was about to do something stupid.
Mm.
I'm relieved that all she did was pull the Doctor away. Good job too, as Bonnie Langford's Mel got so much more to do this episode. Why did everyone who saw the dust cloud think they were going to die? Yes, a dust cloud in central London would be somewhat unusual, but going straight out thinking you're going to die is a big leap.
Mm.
For the people who were on the bus, they could have just thought they'd be safe if the doors were closed, right? Even so, I'm still not quite sure how the Doctor and Mel made it back to UNIT okay, but sure. Yeah. I love that the memory TARDIS made an appearance, which goes somewhat to canonising the Tales of the TARDIS pieces.
Yeah.
However, with the recent Tales of the TARDIS release for the Pyramids of Mars with 15 and Ruby, you could have placed this as taking part during the episode,
as it seemed
to be the intention.
Yeah.
But it completely misses that Mel was also in the Memory TARDIS with them, but not yet in this Tales of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
But one thing I loved about this Memory TARDIS was that when the Doctor flicked the switch to close the doors, we heard the classic door noise.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm one of the people that really does not care much for this Doctor shedding tears at the drop of a hat, and he did it so many times this episode. Yes, I heard you discuss your thoughts in your last podcast, but this for me was just too much.
Okay.
The reveal that Sutek, and I still love the CGI on this creature, had been clinging onto the TARDIS for ages is just massive, as well as leaving his mark on all the places the Doctor had visited.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out when Sutek found the TARDIS is tricky, though. If we assume that this took place after the TARDIS was in the old UNIT priory in Pyramids of Mars, because a version of Sutek hanging onto the TARDIS when he was still imprisoned by the Eye of Horus in Egypt probably didn't happen,
mm-hmm.
and is too timey-wimey to think about, then this could be before events from Attack of the Cybermen, where the Doctor visited Telos, or even before the Brain of Morbius, where the Doctor was on Khan, both planets he mentioned as being dead now.
Mm.
Khan actually seems a likely candidate, as when the Doctor sent Sutek down the time-space corridor, he moved its end to the far future, which was the time period Brain of Morbius was set in.
Mm.
Funnily enough, that story was the second story after Pyramids of Mars. But really, the concept of Sutek clinging to the TARDIS for so long is so implausible that it hurts. With all the TARDIS defences, with the TARDIS becoming Idris for a while, with Jack Harkness clinging onto the TARDIS once as well, along with many other major events that involve the TARDIS, this just seems to be one whopper of a plot hole. Speaking of planets, the Doctor was very fixated on the Ood Sphere, while I was holding out for a mention of Peladon or Metabilis 3. No such luck. Also, the call-outs to the various dates mentioned had significance as well. 1999, the TV movie, 2005, Rose, and I'm assuming that the 1066 references to the Time Meddler.
Mm.
Did anyone else wonder when the Doctor met that survivor on a planet, if the baby carrier was Ruby's? Yes, I did.
Oh, yeah.
It did have me wondering for a moment, especially as the outfit he was wearing looked a little similar to the person who left Ruby on the church steps. But it turned out to be a massively pointless fake-out. All that for a spoon, and why? What happened to all the metal in the universe? Well, the metal in the TARDIS was just a memory of metal.
Yeah, he did say it had to be something real.
Yeah.
In the end, all it felt like was this scene was just designed to be a fake-out and nothing more. Amazingly, no one dies this story. Even Chidozie comes back from the dead.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess Sutek sort of dies.
Yeah.
I'm not quite buying Ruby's mother actually naming Ruby, because her mother was pointing to a sign after leaving her on the church steps. Sure, could argue that she might have known about a CCTV camera, but in the end it turned out that the footage really wasn't that visible anyway.
No.
Even if it was, it's a bit of a leap to figure that's what she meant to name the child.
Yeah.
As to Ruby's mother being important for not being important, again, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense there. Why be so mysterious with the face-hiding cloak in the first place? How could Sutek, who could apparently see and sense everyone due to the dead cells in their body, not do the same with her? Why was Maestro spooked by Ruby's mystery?
Yeah.
Why the whole thing with the snow?
Yeah.
The question about Mrs. Flood remained unanswered, and the questions are added to. Certainly the fourth wall breaking at the end definitely implies that we're going to see her again.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wonder about was that she referred to the Doctor as that clever boy to Sherry. The only one I can think of who ever called the Doctor that was Clara, and as far as we know, she and me, Hashilda, are still out there in their TARDIS. The curious thing also is that the grey jumper and white shirt outfit she's wearing here is the same as what Clara was wearing in Hellbent. But you also have the outfit at the end, which is the same as Romana 1 was wearing in the Rybos operation. As I get to the bottom of this missive, I realise that there's quite a lot that just seems to fall apart about this story now that I've ruminated on it for a while. At the time, I rather liked it, but now I think that I'd have to say it's a bit lacklustre, and maybe whoever's the showrunner, because RTD the second isn't the only guilty party here, should stop trying to end the universe at the end of each season. Now that I've got that out of the way, just touching on a few other things. The boys.
Loving
the new season so far, it's just so utterly bonkers, and they keep finding new ways to gross things out. There's a few ties to the spin-off Gen V that keep coming up, even with some character appearances this past episode.
Yeah.
Fun thing as well, that a couple of weeks I passed by a location shoot for the second season. A store which used to be a supermarket, but is now really some liquidation outlet, was set up as a Voortfresh Farms outlet or something similar. The Acolyte. Another Star Wars spin-off. This time, set a while before the prequels. It's not bad, but I don't think it's really added anything new and interesting to the Star Wars universe yet. A few notable faces there, though. We've had the lead characters from Squid Game as the main Jedi character, Sol, and also Daphne Keen, who was Lyra from the very well done His Dark Materials trilogy, as Jeki Lon. Anyway, I think that's all do for now. Keep calm and stagger on, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
I think that may have been written before the latest episode of The Acolyte, because that was quite interesting what they were doing in that.
But anyway. I've got to catch up on my Acolyte. I've watched the first couple of episodes.
Jay's just planted something in my head.
Oh,
dear.
You know when he said the dates that were mentioned and one of them was 1066?
That would have been before.
Yeah.
Which was the Meddling Monk.
Yeah. Which would have been obviously before Sutek got on the
dice. No. That's not the bit that's got into my head. Clara isn't the only one that said, clever boy.
Oh, who else?
Didn't the monk say that or something similar when the TARDIS was... Because the Doctor rigged up something so the TARDIS shrank. And I'm sure he said something along the similar lines. It's just as soon as he said the 1066 and that, and perhaps the Meddling Monk's done us exchange as well.
Maybe.
Oh, well, we'll find out.
We will, yeah, so... I am definitely reluctant to speculate too much.
We got some audio.
We have a couple of audio feedbacks, yes. Woo! We have indeed. All right, the first one came in from Reese.
Hello, Reese!
Hello, Staggering Stories. And hello, Head of Pertwee. And hello, Cardboard Grunhilde Knobnacker. And hello, Cardboard Clara. And congratulations to your real counterpart on expecting a little one. That's quite nice. Hello, Dave Zilla the Mighty. And hello, Graham. And hello, everyone. I'm sorry.
I'm impressed. We're in the same room.
Hi, everyone. I'm going to be as quick as I can because I have 8 episodes of Doctor Who to talk about.
Wow, okay,
so I'm
going
to get straight into it.
Go for it.
And start off with Space Babies.
Oh, yeah.
And this one was the silliest episode of the season.
Yep.
And it was the closest to other season openers from Russell T Davies. So I'm thinking of New Earth, and I'm thinking of Partners in Crime. I think Smith and Jones had the most sensible opening. And this one was like those two. I didn't mind it. I personally didn't get embarrassed, but I could see why people would. And I also did have the same train of thought as Keith, that millions more people are going to have the chance to see Doctor Who and have seen Doctor Who than previously on Disney Plus. And this is what you're starting with.
Yeah.
But I personally didn't mind it too much. It was better than New Earth, but not as good as Partners in Crime for me. So yeah, it was okay. And The Devil's Chord, I really, really liked this one. There's a lot of it that I like. I like the 60s aesthetic. I liked the costumes that the Doctor and Ruby wore. I liked also the scene where they got changed into them, where they walked along the lower level of the TARDIS.
Yeah,
and then immediately the camera panned up and they're already walking out of the next level. And they're dressed in the costume and the music's fun. They're having a bit of fun. And it was a good shot. So I really liked that. I also really liked Jinx Monsoon. I thought they actually did a very good performance, and I thought, writing-wise and performance-wise, if you're familiar with the Batman Rogues Gallery, I think it was like a cross between the Joker and the Mad Hatter Batman, and I thought it was very good. There's a lot I liked about this. I won't talk about everything I liked because there's so much there and I've got so much to talk about, but one of my favourite things was the scene where the Doctor used the sonic screwdriver in the most sonic way that a sonic screwdriver has been used, in that he resonated the sound of everything and there was a bright light and it went silent for a bit. And, you know, the sonic screwdriver does a lot and has been used to do a lot, sometimes very conveniently and sometimes in ways that most people say, that's not very sonic, you know. And, yeah, I understand that criticism. But I also understand Russell T Davies' mindset that he'd much rather be on the other side of a locked door and experience the drama on the other side than have to deal with a locked door. So I kind of get that. And he'd much rather deal with, get the material issue out of the way and get onto the drama. And I kind of get that point of view. But I also get Eric Saywood's point of view. Was it Eric Saywood who destroyed it for the Fifth Doctor? I get why. If you become too reliant on it, it could be annoying. But I've never really been annoyed by the sonic screwdriver.
It's quite straight.
Even if you want to call it a magic wand as opposed to a sonic screwdriver, then do that, because I quite like having it. Anyway, yeah, I like that scene. I like a lot about this episode. It's very good. And moving on to episode 3. Boom. Hey, look at that. Stephen Moffat came back and suddenly everyone liked this season. Coincidence? No. No, probably is. but there's no hiding the fact that he's my favourite Doctor Who writer. This one I really, really, really like a lot. I liked, again, it's a very Stephen Moffat thing. He set up the premise very quickly in the cold open. We knew about the soldiers and the war that was going on, the daughter that was going on. We learned about the ambulance, the overreactive ambulance in my mind. And we learned about the landmines, the emotion-feeling smart landmines. And we saw the actor who's going to play the next companion too.
Indeed.
All in those 2 minutes, 3 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the episode carried on like that, and I really, really liked it. I love the performances from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they cast an actor that was too old to play the daughter the way she was written, and she might have been acting a little bit out of sorts for her age, but I really liked it, and I also liked the line. I liked the line itself because it was funny, and I liked the way it was delivered because it was the Doctor trying to stay calm. The way he said to Mundy, "You should marry Ruby, then you'd be Mundy Sunday, and I'd laugh every day." It was funny, but also the way it was delivered was the Doctor trying to stay calm by saying something funny so he's not stressed the whole time.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite good. Very good episode. Like this one a lot. The next one, even better for me. I like 73 Yards a lot. This one actually succeeded in scaring me, or at least making me uncomfortable. I just thought the tone and atmosphere and having the woman dressed all in black, his face we can't really see, and the white hair following Ruby got creepier and creepier. The practical joke that the people in the pub played on Ruby was rude, but also quite intense and then quite funny. And then, you know, I'll admit it stuck with me because I have the late afternoon into evening shift at work. I wasn't necessarily scared, but I did imagine I'd probably jump and then be really worried if someone was standing either at the other end of a corridor or between two buildings at work as this person was silhouetted. I didn't know who they were, and I think, oh God, has it come from me now? The curse has come from me. My theory about the curse, by the way, is whatever happens, Ruby is alone. So these people go and talk to the older version, as it turns out, of her. But then they see their worst nightmare, and so that, and it's associated with Ruby, so they run away. But I didn't mind Jean's theory that it shows what would happen if Roger Ap Gwellan became Prime Minister and did take us to nuclear war. And I didn't mind Keith's theory. I agree with Jean. It's a good theory, a good interpretation of it, that it wasn't the Doctor who disappeared, it was Ruby who disappeared. I didn't see it that way, and it still worked for me, but that works probably even better. So that's a good interpretation, and I thought it was a very good episode. I thought the way it was shot, the way it was written, just all of it I really, really liked. And this is the sort of thing, after shows like Years and Years and It's a Sin, that I've kind of wanted from Russell T, and I'm really, really glad we got it, because it was good. Now, this season, up until the next episode, have been getting better and better each episode. And I don't mean to say that this was bad. I liked bits of it, especially the end and especially the observational commentary going on, not necessarily about social media, but more about, well, the racism. And I'll be honest, I noticed it, but I also, the thing I like about it a lot is that it's written in a way that could be taken with double meanings. So it could have been that, you know, he's going to be punished and I can't wait for it. Could have been that the Doctor's hacking the system and being a cyber terrorist, essentially, you could have viewed it as, and he's going to be punished for it and I can't wait for that. But as it turns out, it's a white supremacist, can't wait to see a black man punished, which is terrible. And then one that I noticed, and I laughed at, but this is where I really got the hint after seeing all the white faces in the bubble, was when Lindy said, "Are you two in the same room?" And that could have been taken, and I did take it this way at first, but I clocked the undercurrent. It could have been taken that she was surprised that anyone would talk to each other without the bubble, even in the same room. Yeah. But as it turns out, it was because, are you a fellow young blonde white woman in the same room as that black man? That really, in the end, it got to me. And I'll be honest, this whole episode got to me because, not to harp on about it too much or make it all about me, but I related to it because I'm Aboriginal, I'm Indigenous Australian, but my skin colour doesn't necessarily show it. But people I know and people I'm related to, some of them have darker skin than I do, and they've been on the receiving end of the same sort of thing that Lindy said at the end of the episode, and that the other people said, that line about if you turn away before you're contaminated. Not those specific words, but there have been nasty things said about people I know and love. And they weren't said about me, even though I am Indigenous, I just don't look it. And then their view would be that I'm contaminated. This left me quite frustrated and angry for a few days afterwards, frankly, for quite a while. And that's not in a bad way. That is, it did its job very well. And I respect Russell T for going out there to try and write these things, see if people would notice it. And then I did notice it. And it was confronting. It was powerful. And Shuti Gatwa's performance was excellent in that final scene. Murray Gold's darker version of the 15th Doctor's theme tune was also very good. I can't wait till we get the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Most of it was an okay episode. The ending of it was excellent and just very well done, and hats off to everyone involved. It was confronting.
Much more confronting.
Up next, we have Rogue. And I was surprised to hear a kind of lukewarm reaction to this one. I really, really liked it. I've said for years now that while Loki's been on, it's been the best season of Doctor Who, so it's good that Kate Herron came to write an episode herself, along with Byron E. Redman. And I think they did a great job. I haven't seen Bridgerton either. I don't think any of you had, but I don't think you have to. I knew it was playing on it, and they even hung a lantern on it with Ruby saying, "Oh my, Bridgerton." And that was quite funny. Yeah, I love the humour. I liked the soundtrack. I liked it doing what they do in Bridgerton, where they do orchestral covers of pop songs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
This whole season has looked great in terms of production value and high-quality camera work. It wasn't much of a shock and a surprise and a getting-used-to thing for me, like Gene said it was. I've been wanting Doctor Who to look the best quality possible, and it's in 4K, and it's got a lot of money behind it. I've been wanting this from forever, so I'm glad it's finally achieving that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't ruin it that the previous seasons didn't have that, but it's another touch that I'd like. And also on Rogue as a character, I like him as a character, and I'll talk about his character a bit more in a second. But also, congratulations to Jonathan Groff, who played him, for winning a Tony recently, opposite Daniel Radcliffe, who also won for the same play. Good job to the two of them. But yeah, I could sort of see everyone's comparison to Captain Jack.
Yeah.
I quite like, though, that there's another charismatic, fun, time-travel-y, kind of morally questionable, because bounty hunting isn't actually that great.
Yeah.
And, you know, a time agent, dishonest kind of person that Jack was in his first story was also interesting. Same sort of dynamic. I liked it. It was acted brilliantly. And I look forward to seeing him again, which, you know, we probably will.
Mm.
Then moving on to the finale. And, you know, because of the reveal at the end of this, I'll just say that I bring Sutek's gift of very long feedback. I'm sorry. How great was it to have that cliffhanger and have Sutek there?
Oh, yeah.
I feel quite lucky that one of the 4 or 5 full Tom Baker stories that I've seen was Pyramids of Mars this. I like this a lot. I like that we kind of just jump straight into it and we get a return of a unit theme that was written by Murray Gold way back in Christmas Invasion. So it's been a long time since we first heard that, and it came back now, and I really liked that. I liked having all the characters come back, Kate, Rose, and Colonel Ibrahim, which, as somebody pointed out, is the same name as one of the people, Dr. Ibrahim, I think it was, in Pyramids of Mars.
Yeah.
Oh, and we already had this guy introduced in the 3 specials with Tennant.
Yeah.
I love having Unit in it. I frankly think Unit needs to be around more often, and it needs to actually be competent, because they're constantly being wiped out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked the tone of the first episode. I liked that there was quite a bit of a mystery kind of going on. They were trying to solve the mystery of Susan Triad, and honestly, we should have seen it coming when there was chanting of Susan, 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 because in a Big Finish audio there was Sutek, 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 I'm pretty sure. So that felt like a giveaway once you look back at it.
Yeah.
Jumping forward, because I've been talking for so long, I like both of these episodes. I like the resolution too. In Doctor Who does Avengers Infinity War and Endgame in one episode, also known as Empire of Death.
Yep.
Yeah, it was similar to that. And yeah, like I said on Facebook, that as soon as the stakes got so high, you knew it was going to be undone. And people view that as a bad thing. I don't necessarily, because I've come to expect it in Doctor Who. It happens quite often. And it happens in all sorts of things. Like I just said it. In the Avengers, it happened. And in a lot of sci-fi, it happens. In every episode of Voyager, the ship nearly gets destroyed, and then suddenly it's looking brand new and it's up to scratch again. So it happens all the time. This is a mixed bag for a lot of people, it looks like. I'm sure the team's a bit divided. I know Adam's probably on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I say that the stakes were high and it was going to be undone, for me that doesn't reduce any of the dramatic tension. It doesn't take away from Nshuti Gatwa and his amazingly emotional screams that he did in the Memory TARDIS. It doesn't take away from little poignant things like the Memory TARDIS itself, which I think was introduced in Tales of the TARDIS, which I haven't seen yet.
Yep.
But I've seen pictures of previous Doctors on it.
Yep.
And little things like Mel resting her head on the Seventh Doctor's vest. You know, it didn't take away from the drama for me that it was a lot of it was going to be undone. But I did go, oh, okay. Once it got out of the unit tower, the dust, and it started taking everyone else out, I was like, oh, okay, so there's going to be time travel shenanigans, or there's going to be some sort of reversal, and it happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not as upset as some people who've said I actually genuinely hated the scene where Ruby's mother not only turned out just to be ordinary, I quite like that she was ordinary, but they didn't like the execution of the pointing at the sign and the sign having named Ruby. And, you know, I kind of get that, but I'm not too fussed about it. I like the sentiment of it. The CCTV was there. She pointed at the sign to try and hint that I wanted to be called Ruby. And it would have been nicer if we had a slightly longer season. And we found out before that scene where she said, I always just thought I was named by the public service or priests or whatever. She not was. My mum. And it would have been nice to know that Ruby actually wanted to know if that's what her mum called her. If we knew that earlier, we might have been more invested and we might have been able to know that if we had more episodes. But having said that, I don't think there was a terrible episode this season. So maybe the fewer episodes was part of why I find this season so good. I don't know. I mean, Space Babies, like I said, silly and probably my least favourite.
Yeah.
But I didn't hate it. I didn't think it was terrible. Now, I've carried on a lot and a lot and a lot. Like I said, I bring you Sutek's gift of very long feedback. Basically a podcast within a podcast. So I'm just going to say I liked the final episode. I loved the scene between Ruby and her mother in the cafe. That was so emotional. And I look forward to more. It's great to have a full season of Doctor Who back after quite a while.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Staggerers, and I'll speak to you next time I speak to you. Have a good one. See ya.
Take care.
Thank you. Take care.
This is what I love about our podcast. I think some of what Reese just said was bollocks, but I still adore him.
I like what he said about Dot and Bubble, and I think it was in some ways more powerful than Rosa Parks.
Yeah.
In how it put the whole situation of race over.
I don't know. I don't know if I get that far, but yeah. But both did it very well, I think.
Any more feedback?
We have one more bit of feedback.
Who's it from?
From the Dragon Maker.
Ooh, Terrence, it's Mummy.
Hello, Staggerers.
Hello, Terrence. Dragon Maker.
Hello, Dave Zilla the Mighty. Hello, Head of Pertwee. Happy 17th anniversary, y'all.
Thank you.
More year, and you'll be old enough to vote in the US.
Woo.
But let us not delve into politics. Messy stuff.
Indeed.
Welcome back, Stephen. It's been a while.
He's dead again.
Yeah.
Shame on me for neglecting to mention William Russell's passing in my last feedback.
Never mind.
I saw him in person at the last Regeneration Who convention about 6 years ago.
Mm.
Time flies.
Yeah.
While I didn't speak to him one-on-one, I did attend at least one of the panels he was on. Mm. Now we only have one remaining link back to the start of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's he saying is around
I found myself at a loss this past Friday with no new Doctor Who to watch.
Yep.
This was such a short season, made shorter by dropping two episodes at the start of the season.
Series?
What are we calling it this time around?
I think it's season again.
And I was confused by the way Disney had things listed on their app.
Ooh.
I'd heard over and over again that there were 8 episodes. And according to Disney, The Legend of Ruby Sunday was episode 8 because they were counting the church on Ruby Road as episode number 1.
Right. Ah.
Of course, I figured it out, but it's still aggravating.
Yeah.
It was really nice to hear a positive review on The Legend of Ruby Sunday.
Mm.
A couple of the podcasts I listen to regularly were not happy with the episode, nor with Empire of Death.
I think Legend
yes,
of
I can
amazing.
See the problems in both, but still thought they were great.
Yeah.
Granted, I'm no deep thinker. I'm just along for the ride.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a great ride.
Yeah.
Empire of Death was loaded with callbacks to earlier in the season, even more so than Legend, which makes it difficult to share with folks who haven't watched all the episodes.
Mm.
In our little watch party at the convention, there was one person who wanted to join us but hadn't seen any of Got With episodes, except for the giggle.
No.
We watched both parts of the finale, mostly for her sake, and I pointed out the references as they came up. I'll be doing the same with my brother when we watch Empire in a day or two. I was so excited by Legend that I made him watch it with me, and we would have watched Empire last week, but I was felled by con crud, and he's been too busy since I got better.
Aww.
So, soon. I have questions, which you've probably already answered, and comments about Empire of Death. So, in no particular order, here goes.
Yeah.
The Memory TARDIS.
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't that the set from Tales of the TARDIS?
Yes.
I haven't been able to watch those, but they did share a few clips at Galley this year, and it looks really familiar.
Mm-hmm.
That little set is crammed with so many props from over the decades.
And consoles.
I want to go back and see how many I can identify.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved that the little glowing thing Ruby and the Doctor were sitting by on the floor was a lighted model of the 13th Doctor's TARDIS. Yeah.
Looks like a fire, but...
Yeah.
Mel. Oh, she's so good in these episodes.
Yeah.
She's given so much more to do than she ever was back in the 80s, including, you know, acting rather than screaming.
Yeah.
If she's not a regular on the theoretical unit spinoff, I will be quite sad.
Yeah, definitely.
Ruby meeting her mom hit me a lot harder on second viewing. And what a lovely parting scene between Ruby and the Doctor. Mm. Unless you've been living under a rock in a deep undersea cave, I expect anyone who knows anything about current Doctor Who knows she'll be back next season.
Yeah.
But it still tugged a bit at the heartstrings.
Mm.
And I simply loved that final shot of her, surrounded by her two mothers and her delightful grandmother. It was good to finally see Cherry out of bed.
Yeah.
And having a cup of tea.
Okay. The question we're all asking, I think... What's up with Mrs. Flood?
Yes.
Mentions of her hiding herself away.
Yeah.
Of great plans she had before she and Cherry were dusted.
Yeah.
Not to mention her Mary Poppins meets Romana One speech to camera there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very interested to see what Russell will be doing with that character in the next season.
Hmm.
A friend has a completely off-the-wall suggestion. She's Pandora.
Oh,
that's for all those who listen to the Gallifrey series from Big Finish.
Yes.
And possibly the deepest cut I've ever made here. Other thoughts are still bouncing around my head, but, and say it along with me, I'm running late and need to get this feedback in. Anon, Catherine the Dragon Maker.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine.
Yeah, it's bizarre to me that somebody would go to a Doctor Who convention, clearly a big Doctor Who fan, and not have seen any of this season. Yeah. How is that possible? I know there are people who, on some twisted principle, aren't watching it, possibly because they're deeply racist or something, I don't know. But...
I can understand if it's only 8 episodes, you're waiting to binge it.
Maybe.
But even so...
You want to see it all in 1 month for Disney Plus, only pay for 1 month.
Yeah.
But then you can come in halfway through and catch up the first half and then see the second half in real time. I don't know.
It's one thing I've never been able to understand about Doctor Who fans.
Yeah.
99% of the Doctor Who fans I've ever known are decent people.
Yeah.
And they embrace the whole...
ethos of it.
Ethos of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Why on earth... would you be first sexist and then racist?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And be a Doctor Who fan?
Yeah. It is a dichotomy that you can be a Doctor Who fan and be a racist.
How can you justify it to yourself?
To the extent that you will not watch the programme.
Exactly, and the ones who wouldn't watch Jodie.
Yeah.
I've never been able to get my head around
that. Well, as I've said before, as I've bitched quite a few times on this podcast, you can grow out of things. You can fall out of love. That's fine. That's allowed. That's a part of life. Why are you still watching it just to bitch about it?
Anyway.
Yep.
Lead us out, Adam.
So, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Aww. Thank God.
But never fear. Oh, next Christ. One, there'll be more of the same.
Save me.
More fun, frivolity and jollity.
Woohoo.
More news and reviews. More who, old and new.
Ish.
So until that.
N for shooty.
So?
Nearly nice.
Neglified.
What?
That's not even a word.
Naked
nun with nine
knobs.
That's not an N either.
But it's an N sound, so it gets it.
Comes noisily.
If shooty could be an N and it sounds like it's CH, the knobs could be on there.
Knocking.
That's a
K. I know, I'm doing it deliberately.
Towards us.
This is me, Adam, saying goodbye.
Farewell.
Au revoir.
No man can ever win every battle, but no man should fall without a struggle.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, series 1, number 449, featuring Adam Purcell, Karen Dunn, Gene Riddler and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
And flibble flobble.
Necromancer.
I beg your pardon?
Apple looking to make a TV series. I'll start that again.
Are you dying?
Yeah.
Tickets go, I think, 10 a.m. on Friday.
I'll be asleep at 10 a.m. on Friday.
Me too, probably.
Ditto.
Oh, yeah.
Depends on how long it takes to do the count.
Oh,
Even given that, I'm doing postal vote openings in the afternoon and then the election through the night.
They've said our count will probably finish around 6 a.m. So I'm going to say 8 a.m. because it's never that easy in Crawley. And then I've got to rush home and write it up and then I'll go to bed.
Wow, as usually finishes about 4:35, but you've got the recounts and that kind of stuff. Again, I wouldn't expect to get out much before 8.
I don't know. There are going to be many recounts required. I don't know.
I don't think there will be.
I don't think there will be, personally.
I don't know. You never know, but I don't think it's going to be quite as close as Laura Muppet's.
37.
Yeah.
Was that wiggle for any reason?
No.
Okay. Lead us out, Adam.
Adam.
Oh, God.
Oh. Whoa. That puts him on the spot.
Let me find the
Shall
text.
I recite the lines for you?
Can we have a spotlight?
You don't know. You don't get to just read it. He's reading it. I had to make it up.
I've got it written here somewhere. Where can I find it?
Oh, you've been making it up, have you?
Yeah. No, he's writing. He's
you
reading.
Have been listening. Oh, no, that's my out thingy.
How long have you been doing this?
I just turn off and the talking at the end.
You have to tell Andy
tell
that.
There.
All he's been doing is typing up the bit to read the disclaimer.
Yeah.
Someone put up on Facebook, they were sitting on the underground and they were chatting to their friend and they were commenting about how fit Shooty Gatwell is. And then they looked up.
And they're shooting at her.
And he was smiling at
her. Was he really there?
He was actually on the tube sitting opposite. He was just sitting, he had
in disguise.
Baseball cap and I it. And he heard them. And as he got off the train, he lifted the baseball cap up so they could see it was and sort of like smiled. And of course, everyone was putting on Facebook, because he knows he is.
That happened to India Fisher, didn't it?
Yeah.
She's sitting on the underground and there's a guy opposite her reading the Doctor Who magazine. And on the back of the Doctor Who magazine is an advert for Charlie Adventures on Big Finish. And he closes the magazine, looks at the picture and nods, then looks up and she's smiling at him. And he looked down and he looked up again.